Hey guys, I absolutely love that you're checking out and listening to the podcast. And I only have one ask quickly, and that would be if you could please share this podcast with somebody else that you maybe know that is going through the system or struggling to navigate it from the youth soccer perspective. And that would mean the absolute world to me because, as you know, I don't sell anything through the podcast and I don't have any sponsorships. And the more people that I can help, that is my overall objective. So I would absolutely love if you could share this with somebody. Take the 5 seconds to do so by sending it through social media or WhatsApp or whatever way that you like to share content, and I will make sure that I continue to deliver valuable and insightful content for you. Welcome back to the Obsession Beast Parent Education Level 1 course. We're now in class number 3, and with this class, we're going to be discussing the 3 zones of youth development. Now, you heard me talk about these briefly, the 3 zones of youth development. And the question is, do you remember what they are? Do you remember the 3 zones? And I guess we're going to find out shortly if you do remember, but obviously this whole class today is discussing the 3 zones and helping you understand and make better decisions with them. And let's really jump into this. So before we really get into what the 3 zones are, let's talk about this key thing here. For the non-generational talent, this means a normal football player, somebody that is not going to be a multi-millionaire, so to speak, by 15, 16, 17 years old. What they do before 15 years old is basically irrelevant. Now, there's contingencies to this, and those are the following. The player needs to be developed and prepared for one single opportunity. So they need to be ready. And that's where this whole thing comes into. And the 3 zones plays a huge piece to this. And you're going to find out how that all transpires in a second. But before we get into the zones, you should remember the youth soccer playbook, the formula, the blueprint, whatever word you want to use to describe it, it's here. We have the pre-phase, which is birth to 4 years old. Phase 1 from 4 to 10 years old. Phase 2, 11 and 12 years old. Phase 3, which is 13 to 14 years old. Phase 4, which is 15 plus years old. So this is important to remember. You should have already watched or listened to the playbook. And if you have, then you'll remember this. And this will tie into the zones, okay? So zone 1, like I mentioned previously, but we're going to be breaking down further here, is the development preparation zone. And it also, I'm adding this now, and I've said it in other classes, but the experience. And this is birth to 15 years old. So if we go back to the playbook for a second, which is here, you can see these are the phases of youth development. We're not talking about phases, we're talking about zone. What zone is your child in? So in zone 1, which is here, which we're discussing now, this is the development and preparation zone. This is from birth to 15 years old. And the key thing about this is we're developing, we're preparing, and we're trying to provide experience, which you can see on the bottom part that says focus on training and prepping the player for zone 2. That's literally the entire job of zone 1. Focus on the training, development, preparation, and experience to get the player ready for zone 2. Okay. Now, if we look at target specifically for the phases within the zone, which we're going to go through all of them, which you'll see momentarily, and this will make sense as we're going through it. These are the targets from the playbook for the pre-phase. Comfortability with dribbling and core skill, first language other than native, basic 1-versus-1 concept, learning the native language of the country, so English, which is the United States, through school, which would be like preschool, kindergarten, intro to juggling, and then watch lots of football at all levels, including games and training. That should be your, or that is, the pre-phase of the playbook. Now, if we go to phase 1, this is now 4 to 10 years old, obviously expands. Core skill with both feet. Be a beast in 1v1 competition, so playing 1v1. Being able to overcome challenges, that will happen a lot, of course. You want to have at least 1 million touches on the ball by 10. We want to enter competitive play at 9 to 10 years old with, but this is only achievable with a base level of skill. And if you follow the strategies in the book or in the process, you'll see where you're at. Then we have guest play at least 10 to 20 events by 10 years old. Introduce individual tactical concepts, which is basic level, and then lots of futsal and 3v3. Now look at phase 2, which is 11 and 12 years old. We have total of 2 million touches on the ball, basic passing and combinations, master of 3v3 and 5v5 concepts, develop game IQ and patterns of play, travel at least once, this is key, travel at least once internationally. So this would be going to like England, France, Brazil, Spain. So you can kind of see what the level looks like. And we'll touch on that later. And it's also like deep dived in the playbook. We want to guest play at least another 10 to 20 events, and we want to introduce greater individual tactical concepts. Now, the final phase of this, we are in the phase three, which is 13 to 14 years old. This is now moving, because the player is now prepared, moving into 11v11 play with other strong players. So we would have things like tactical variation training, which you can look for yourself, focus on the speed of play, so playing in two touches, and the pace of the pass. You want to start introducing position-specific training. We want highly competitive matches because the player is now prepared for this, and the ability to play at least 2 years up. And this will now translate into zone two. So if you go back real quick and look at all these are all just to prepare. So the pre-phase, phase one, phase two, phase three is literally to prepare for zone two, which is our opportunity window or zone, which is basically 15 to 19 plus. The plus is for like 20, 21, 22, 23 years old. And then obviously there are exceptions to the rule because, for example, Jamie Vardy signed pro, I think, at like 28. So there are outliers and exceptions to the rule. It does happen. But the key range is 15 to 19 plus. And since the player has been developed following the strategies outlined previously, the player is now prepared to take an opportunity. So this is going to get into phase four of the playbook, which is, again, translating the same way, 15 plus years old. If you're not in an MLS academy, the player should be playing adult level competition like in UPSL or something like that. Focusing on network and connections. If the college is the preferred route, make sure you're in college recruiting or in the process of it, which again, I have for free. You just have to go to my YouTube channel to get it, which is an entire course called the College Recruiting Masterclass. You need to really be mastering the mental side, which is like focus, discipline, and doing the right things, like not partying and doing things that would take away from achieving your future potential. And this is key here, which I think people really undervalue, which is the ability to stand out and perform. If you're not a standout and you can't perform, don't expect to get to a higher level. And I'll give you a real story here shortly. And then this will obviously lead to, if you do this all correctly, earn your next move. And that's what the second zone's for. And we're going to be touching on zone three shortly. But I need you guys to understand this piece, okay? So because the player has been developed and prepared, they can then earn their move, which would be zone three. So that's where this comes into effect, earn your next move. This is now zone three. You have earned your next move, and the whole process starts over. Now you're working from bottom, because you're now into either collegiate or professional football. And this is where networking becomes critical, along with exposure. So networking is, I don't want to say who's in your back pocket, but who's in your back pocket? Like, who can you rely on to potentially help you get something? That's what your network is. Like, this might be cliche, but really in this industry with football, you're only as good as your network, because you might not be, or I should say you might be a top level player, but if you don't have a network that can support you and get you verified, like seen and put into the right environments, the exposure piece, and can vouch for you, then don't expect to get somewhere, because you just won't be seen. That's why exposure and networking is so important. Now, there is a difference between exposure and being exposed. Now, I'll quickly highlight this, but this will be dived in more at the level two obsession beast parent education. But basically, exposure is going to events where college scouts or professional scouts are. That's the exposure piece. Being exposed, different word or phrase, is having those people actually know you and watch you. Now, again, we'll dive into that greater in level two. So if you want to really get a deep dive, that's what level two is about. This is more of an overview piece, okay? Now, next piece here. This is a personal example. This is a guy that I know very well, Francesco. He is a good player, 20 years old, might be 21 now, actually. I think he's 21. He played for a bunch of different clubs, ended up playing for Orlando City B, and ended up playing for us at high soccer for a little while, and eventually got a move to a collegiate program, which is right here, California State University Bakersfield. And the story about how this happened for him was, there's a friend of mine from Ireland that brought a group of players over for college games. So he happened to play in a game against Stetson University. There was a scout there from that, I think he was the assistant coach actually, from California State University Bakersfield, watching that game for a goalkeeper. Now this is actually a true story. This might be a little surprising to you, but true story. The assistant coach was at this game of this program versus Stetson University. Francesco played in it, and the guy was there scouting a goalkeeper. And Francesco was a standout. I wasn't at the game, so I don't know specifically what he did to stand out in that sense, but he stood out. Even though the coach was there looking for a goalkeeper, long story short, he ended up getting a scholarship to go to California State University Bakersfield, and that's where he's at now. And the only reason why he got that opportunity was because he stood out on that field, even though the coach that was there watching was looking to recruit a goalkeeper. So his job was there to go look for a goalkeeper. Instead of a goalkeeper, he found Francesco. And that's why standout and performance is so important, because if you don't have that, then you're not going to get there. So the key with this is, what is the point? Kyle, where are you going with this? Great question. You're going to find out right now. It doesn't matter what league or level you play at. If you do not perform, you will not get to Zone 3. And like I said already, Zone 3 is the next level. So in the case of Francesco, at that game against Stetson University, had he not performed, he would not have gone to a Division I college and played there. Just wouldn't have happened. He had to perform and he got it. And that's why this is so important with the three zones. Okay, so again, Zone 3 is the next level zone, 15 plus years old. This is the player has made it to the next level. They're continuing on that path. And the next level is, from my perspective, collegiate or the professional environment. That's simple. And once you get there, you start a whole nother roadmap, which is either the collegiate roadmap or the pro roadmap. And that's the fact about it. Now, let's look at this. What are the ages of this environment? So these are a couple of questions, right? So what are the ages in these environments? So collegiate and pro, what are the ages? I'm going to help you out in a second. What is an average number of players on the roster? What happens if you don't perform? And why are they there? These are four fundamentally important questions. I'm not going to answer just yet, but I'm going to take you through, and I think this will help you understand. Okay, so I'm going to give you now some next level examples that are personal. This is not something that I made up. This is actually about me, and I think this will help you understand, okay? So I played for a college called St. Leo University, which is down by Tampa, Florida, just north actually, but it was a Division II school. At the time, people called us a powerhouse of Division II. We were very good. We were always top 10, top 15 in the country in my 4 years there, and just a good program, very good coach from a coaching perspective, and just a great program in terms of producing results on the field. Now, we had 36 rostered players on average per year, and the average was about 6 domestic, which means American players, and that's not a lot. Like, I can't do the percentage in my head that quickly, but the point is 36 rostered players and only 6 were American. That's kind of crazy to think about, really. So that's hard. And then the example would be, an easy example would be that we had 4 goalkeepers on the team. We had our starter, our backup, a backup of the backup, and then a backup of the backup of the backup. So to quickly highlight how that actually works, so that actually makes a little bit more sense to you, I hope. We had our starting goalkeeper that would play basically every single game if he wasn't injured, or if we were up or down by a lot, he would go in. We were almost never down by a lot, but we would be up by a lot sometimes. So if we were up by a lot, then we would put in a backup, the first backup. So the backup. The third and fourth string goalkeepers, probably, I don't remember them ever playing in an official match. They might have, like, the third string might have got something, like maybe 10 to 15 minutes once. But it was the starter that always played. It was the backup that got, you know, the most occasional of minutes. And then the other two never played. But there were four goalkeepers that played at our college, or I played at my college. Now, this is interesting because this leads to the previous questions that I asked. What are the ages in this environment? What are the number of players? Well, I already gave the number of players, but I still will try to answer the other ones. And this one is the ages, right? So at my university, I was, at the time, as a freshman, of course the youngest player, but I had guys on my roster that were 20, 21, 22, 23. I think the oldest guy I ever played with was 26 at St. Leo. So if you do the math on that, you know, that's a big jump going from youth to college. D2 is way more open in the sense of you can have almost whatever age available. Like my, not the first game, but one of my first games, we played Barry University and they had a 31-year-old player on their team. Like that's crazy to think about, that a youth player or a former youth player 3 months ago is now playing against a 31-year-old man. Big difference, right? And those are things that make a difference. Now, when you think about the number of players, so I'm going back a second, you think about 36 players, the ages of the team or the ages of the players, what happens if you don't perform? Can you take a guess? If you don't perform at that level, right? Let me say that again. If you don't perform at that level, you're not going to play. You're going to be dropped. You might not play ever again. Like I remember one time, perfect example. I believe it was my first game, actually. Might have been the second, but I'm like 98% sure it was the first game. I go in, I sub on, you know, my whole youth career, I was a starter. Sub on, puts me at right back. First off, I wasn't a right back. I was a midfielder. At least in my mind, I was a midfielder. And coach says, hey, Kyle, you're going in, you're going to right back. Right back, okay? So I'm going to right back. And he was like, look, we're winning 1-0. There's 25 minutes left, whatever it is. We want to lock the game up. Don't go forward. I'm like, but I love to go forward. What do you mean, don't go forward? So me being me, I go in, start playing. First chance I get, bomb forward. Coach is pissed. You can hear him on the sideline, pissed. Second chance I get, bomb forward. He's now real pissed. Third time, I run forward, bam, subs me off immediately, off. And he goes, Kyle, I'm being very generous when I'm saying this because this is not how he said it to me. Kyle, you're uncoachable. You're done playing. I don't think I played the next two games. So I had to work my way back into the team because I didn't perform how the coach wanted me to perform. Now, this is a great question. What positions did I play? And this might actually surprise you because, you know, you might think that your kid's a striker or he might be a midfielder. He might be a goalkeeper, whatever it is for you. You might not believe this. True, though. 100% true. I played every single position throughout my college career at St. Leo University, except for goalkeeper. Now, I didn't do that every single year. So, for example, my freshman year, I didn't play every single position. My sophomore year, I didn't play every single position. Junior year, so on and so forth. But I played certain positions throughout each year. So, for example, the first time I played striker was my senior year. So I played number 9 my senior year at St. Leo University. My sophomore, I played a lot of wing. I played number 7 and 11 a lot. I also played center back. I also played, not center back, sorry, center mid, 6, 8, and number 2, number 3. And also my senior year, I also played center back. So I played a variety of positions throughout my 4 years in college. The only position I didn't play is goalkeeper. Now, the only reason why I was able to do that was because tactically, I had a good footballing brain. Now, what I would call my prime position was a 6 or an 8. As a 6, my prime position is a playmaking 6, not a destroyer 6. And an 8 is box to box. Now, because I knew how to play those positions, I was able to play other positions, not as proficiently as I would as a 6 or an 8 in those type of roles, but I was able to do the job requested from my coach. And that's important because I don't think people always understand that. So you can see the numbers here. I put it in a 4-3-3 system, which is 2-4-5-3, 6-8-10, 7-9-11. Those are all the positions that I played at St. Leo University, which is kind of crazy to think about. Okay, now I didn't tell you before, I do have semi-professional playing experience. And this, I'll make this as quick as I can, but just to kind of highlight the same premise. So my first game when I'm in France, right outside Saint-Étienne, I tell them, hey, I'm an 8. I said, I can also play six as a playmaker, not a destroyer. They said, okay, cool, great. We get our first game, a first official game, by the way, I get put into. I don't remember who we played against, by the way, so it won't matter. But the point is, you can see there, I played the number seven, which is the right wing. And then in the second half, they put me as the number five, which is the left center back. And I'm like, but, my position is number six or number eight. I told you guys that. And their answer to me was, is kind of funny. They said, Kyle, we know what position you think you can play. We want to see what you can bring to the team. And I was like, kind of dumbfounded at that point. I'm like, but this isn't about the team. This is about me. Well, what people forget to realize, when you start getting to that level, coaches at the next level have to win or will be fired. So if you think about a college coach, you know, they have a mortgage, they have a family to feed, they have bills to pay, long story short. They don't care ultimately about your feelings. What they care about is making sure they get the results to keep themselves in the job. Otherwise, they have to go find a new job. They don't want to find a new job. Of course, they will if they are forced to by being fired, but they're not there to go get another job. They want to win to keep their job. So they're not going to care about how you feel. They're going to put you in a position at that level where they feel you make the most benefit to the team. And this is where it gets a little funky for people, because they don't quite understand at the next level, it's not about development anymore. It's about winning. Even at college, it's about winning. And if the college coach doesn't win enough, he will be fired. They have athletic directors, and the athletic director sets the expectation. We're expecting XXX and YYY. And the coach has to align with that and try to achieve those results or exceed them. And by doing so, he will be rewarded or he will be fired. Happens all the time. And that's part of the business. And so those are things that I think people need to understand when it comes to this type of stuff at the next level. So continue on with my recommendations. So this might have been a lot to go through. Luckily, it's not that long, so you can rewatch it if you need to. But the ultimate objective of my recommendations are you need to help prepare your child for the realities of the next level as discussed with this class in this one. It's a lot. It's a lot of information in that there might be things that you didn't realize or understand that you might have taken away, or maybe you even have more questions. But like I said, level two will dive way deeper into this entire process about the next level and things and processes to hopefully get yourself there, at least your child there. You need to understand, and your child as well, that everything learn that not everything will be cupcakes and rainbows. Completely true. It's not all going to be sprinkles, and there's going to be a lot of down moments and hard moments, and you have to learn how to adjust and deal with that. And then the next piece is playing time is earned, especially in zone two and zone three, and it should be. Playtime should not be guaranteed in zone two or three at all. You could argue zone one, it could or couldn't, but the key is you need to earn it. And then the last piece with that is like that mental resolve to push through challenges. And that's what you need to try and help your player with as well. And if you need help with that, I have an entire online course for free that you can get from my YouTube channel called The Pro Mindset. And I have a playlist for it. You just follow along and have your kid implement. It's that simple, man. So hopefully you got a lot of value from this one, from class three with the three zones of youth development and the impact of it. And just the zones, the playbook pieces, how it ties to the next level, and the details that kind of go with that. So I hope you found value from this. And as always, guys, we have more classes to get through, a lot more content for you to learn and absorb to take back to your environment and help implement with your child. Without further ado, guys, we will see you in the next class. If you want more information, I have my age development curriculum that you can watch and look at for free on my YouTube channel, Kyle C. Wilson Official. All you need to do is just smash that subscribe button when you get there, and we'll see you there.